Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 21st, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, a prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well. I mean, for today is, today's the summer solstice, and I have at various times in my life, and particularly as I've gotten older, argued that things like the summer solstice, the fall, the equinox, the winter solstice, these are all profoundly human and important celestial events. And you can easily see where they would take on religious significance to people. And I think that I guess I'll just go out and say that people think that advanced religions, monotheistic advanced religions, are somehow superior to religions that recognize the cycle of the earth. I guess I'm not so sure I agree with that. But anyway, today is the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. From now on, the days are going to start getting shorter again, if you can believe it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, DR, we are in a strange, strange world led by our authoritarian in chief, Mr. Trump, we cannot avoid the topic of the day, which is the tender age concentration camps that our own U.S. government is trying to formulate. As of yesterday, Mr. Trump decided basically back down and made an executive order to allow families to stay together. Whether or not that's any kind of solution to the horrific thing that's been presented to the public over the last few days is unclear, but he did that. And so I guess the question is, you know, as climate hawks, how do we process and interpret this kind of barbarity? And what does it tell us about, you know, what we ought to be doing? Do we say put down climate stuff and work on immigration things? Do we try and draw a connection between the coming waves of climate refugees and what we're seeing here on the southeast border? Do we say this is a teachable moment, say we must never do this again? I mean, they said that in 1945, right? But I don't know. What's your take on it, D.R.? Well, this is a podcast. We want to talk about climate stuff, and here we are talking about this horrific immigration policy.
Well, number one, George Santayana famously observed that those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it, and you have a lot of people who apparently either didn't learn from history or don't care about history, and thus were repeating it. And number two, it basically goes to show you that whenever you see denialism, you see the sort of soullessness and amorality that gives rise to this sort of stuff. This is sort of like the Peter Sinclair thesis about climate denialism being linked to bigotry. Mm-hmm. Once again, it's almost like if you're willing to deny, you know, if you're willing to deny certain realities, you're more than inclined to deny others, such as the reality that these are human beings that you're busting apart with these draconian, beyond draconian policies.
It's an interesting point. It was that the whole question of denial of the humanity of the people that are coming into the country, the deliberate embrace of falsehoods and deception. It's, in a sense, it's no different between climate denial and the sort of immigration picture that Donald Trump very effectively. I mean, the guy does have a genius for getting his way, right? Managing the media. I mean, those are all the same cloth, right? And I guess it all has to be combated together. I mean, I was listening on the radio earlier today, and a guy named Folkenflik at NPR, I don't know if you heard it, but he basically said, you know, Trump is lying, and you've got this instance where you can't even pretend that there's some gray area that they're skirting and they didn't really understand. They're flat out contradicting each other and reversing their own statements over the course of a couple of days. The question is, what does that mean for the country and the American public to so clearly see the people that represent us, right? Mm-hmm. Our leaders, our elected leaders, having no regard for the truth and actually almost insultingly changing the story. And you're supposed to eat it, swallow it. I don't know. I mean, it's help me, DR. If I stop, if I break down in tears like Rachel Maddow, what are you going to do? You're going to we'll have to shut the podcast down early.
It is just, when you think about it, you can't help but break down into tears when you think about how appalling this policy is. And there's going to be, you know, even though Trump appears to have backed down now, this is going to continue. Something like this is going to continue happening, because when you go back to all the fear mongering about the Syrian refugees and the connection between climate and the crisis in Syria, and how people didn't want those Syrian refugees to come to the United States, there's going to be some climate related havoc that's going to result in a large refugee population coming to the United States, and there's going to be more nativist sentiment coming up to say stay out, stay out, stay out.
Right. No, I agree. It's going to happen. I think that what's happened even now is just a tiny retreat to turn the heat down and these people. But I mean, I saw a tweet somewhere that said the way we treat children is the way we treat the future. Mm-hmm. Right. And the ability of this government to misuse and abuse children is part and parcel of abusing the children of the future, because these children mm-hmm. are the future. I mean, it's all kind of the same thing. But the denial of what's happening on climate, which is basically an insult to the future, is mirrored in this insult to children. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's kind of a, I mean, is it possible to separate the abuse and monstrousness of Trump from what might come after him? Right. In other words, when we say that, you know, when I just a statement I just made is the way we treat these children is the way we would treat the future. Right. Mm-hmm. Is that something that applies to America outside of Trump, or, you know, if Trump was taken out, or is Trump mm-hmm. just allowing the most poisonous venom out of our system and exposing it? I hope in 10 years, maybe this is a turning point where in 10 years we have a more humane immigration policy and a more sane climate policy, because wiser heads have finally been able to prevail, and that mm-hmm. what's happening now really isn't a representation of us. But, you know, when I lie awake at night, you wonder, maybe it really is a representation, because what we're doing now is not that far from things we've done in the past, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we always have to be on guard against nativism. And this is a harsh lesson to be learned in that respect.
And I think one of the lessons that's worth taking, even for myself, is that somehow it's easy to lull yourself into a sense of security, saying that, I mean, through my entire life, you know, fascism had been vanquished in World War II, and mm-hmm. America stood strong against communism, and that somehow that was now set in history, and you didn't have to worry about it anymore. When, in fact, all of a sudden you realize that all that hatred, all that racism, all that stuff just comes bubbling back up, because it's part of human nature. It's not something that it's built in, I think, to the way people are. And unless you're constantly guarding against that, I don't want to say evil, but that mindset, it's going to come back, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we see now. Some people would say it never left, right? But it's back now. Well, there you go. I mean, the small retreat by the Trump administration recently signing an executive order. You know, the guy could have picked up a phone and called Secretary Nielsen, right? And told her, stop doing this. But he had to have an executive order and take credit for it. Mm-hmm. So please, dear listener, try and put this, connect this horrific policy on the border to the need for climate action, because it does stem from similar sources. And the solution in both cases is a humane, pragmatic worldview that tries to solve problems instead of scapegoating the weakest. All right, put that down there. Tell me, DR, this is now 2018, believe it or not, June of 2018. Many years ago, in the late 1980s, tell me what happened 30 years ago. What's our 30th anniversary coming up?
Yes, it was on June 23rd, 1988, that then NASA scientist James Hansen addressed the United States Senate, telling the Senate that we were now in an age of increased danger due to human-caused climate change, rising greenhouse gases due to the burning of fossil fuels, and that the U.S. Senate and that the government needed to take action to reduce emissions. It was a warning that was sound. It was a warning that was prophetic. And unfortunately, in many respects, it was a warning that was completely ignored by the United States political establishment.
Yes, it's sad. But it's sad. But I mean, it's an interesting milestone because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Hansen was one of the first reputable scientists to actually say this stuff in public, right? I mean, there had been, there were papers, there were people studying it. There was certainly a vibrant scientific effort, but this is the first time it rose to the level where someone from NASA got up and talked about it, right? Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it was in many respects, in certain respects, I would say a turning point in terms of the discussion over climate change. Obviously, 6 months later came the beginnings of the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change,
which we still have.
His statements were cited in the vice presidential debates that year, with both, you know, amazingly enough, to think 30 years later, that both the Democrat and the Republican that year, Lloyd Bentsen and Dan Quayle, both agreed that we need to take action. Uh-huh. And yet to go from that to what we see now, it was not necessarily a forward movement. It's been, sadly, in many respects, a precipitous decline.
Hansen, even at the time, it was not greeted with all hosannas and welcome, right? I mean, he took a lot of flack, and through the 1990s, he was, especially in the Bush administration, right? They really went after him.
Yes.
Did they not? I mean, he was scapegoated and made some sort of a figure of derision.
Yeah, there was an effort to try to have him fired during the George H.W. Bush administration. The United States Senate resisted that, and there was an attempt to basically censor him, to basically prevent him from speaking to the media during the George W. Bush administration, which became a significant controversy.
And he has continued to speak. So here's a guy, one of the first people to shine a light, so to speak, on the climate issue in a way that resonated, right? It's kind of like saying Columbus was the first guy to discover America, right? He really wasn't, but I mean, he was the guy who got the credit, right? Hansen was the one who talked to the Senate about it for the first time. He suffered for having done that, but he's continued to be a climate advocate through the years in various ways. And his positions have evolved. And so tell me, what are some of the things that James Hansen has been up to recently? Now, he's a grandfather. He's 30 years on, right? So he's an older gentleman now. Tell me, what has he been doing through the 21st century, I guess, the 2000s here?
Well, he's been involved in a lot of activism, involved in a lot of protests. He was arrested as part of the protests against the Keystone XL pipeline. He's also been an advisor to some of the various lawsuits that have been launched to try to get the federal government to reduce greenhouse gas emissions as well.
Right. So his mentorship is part of the public trust case that we talk about a lot, right? There's the Giuliani case. If you've listened to this podcast in the past, you've probably heard us talk about the Giuliani case, which is the public trust case. And I think that one of the plaintiffs in there is one of Jim Hansen's grandchildren, right?
I believe that's correct, yes.
That's right. And so he's been active in that kind of legal attempt. And he's also had lots of opinions about how we could address the problem of clean energy and what to do. And I guess just in passing, let me say that Hansen has more in the last decade or so, more recently, walked this line between being a scientist and an advocate, right? And he's been slandered for that as well, as being someone who was trying to translate the scientific data into some kind of policy action, which most scientists, you know, stand back. They try and stand on their data. He was more outspoken, right?
That's correct, and he tells the AP that you know that if scientists don't speak out, other vested interests who don't who you know will try to create doubt or create confusion will be the ones who dominate the discourse on this issue.
Right. And I think that Jim Hansen has additionally, over the course of the last I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, become much more of an advocate for nuclear power, right? Mm-hmm. And I think his argument being that the time is so short, the need is so great, that there is no other alternative other than to embrace the technology of nuclear power, which can give lots of people abundant amounts of energy that's not carbon-based. And he says, why aren't we doing this, right? Isn't that his argument, kind of?
Yes, which is interesting in the sense that I have not seen. I don't know if you have, but I have not seen in all the recent interviews of Hansen whether he's been asked about, you know, his take on the Trump administration's efforts to bail out nuclear power, because theoretically he'd be for that, you know, on the grounds of that's a carbon free basis of energy.
Well, I mean, you can make the argument, there's the old Korean saying, that sometimes the blind dog pees on a fire hydrant, right? So Donald Trump says he wants to keep nuclear power alive, and maybe that you can make an argument, a bona fide climate hawk could make an argument that nuclear power plants should be kept alive because of the green energy component.
Mm-hmm. We need to make nuclear great again.
We need to make nuclear. It's not an argument that I particularly adopt, but on the other hand, I think legitimate people can make it. So Hansen has made those kinds of arguments and gotten, again, a lot of flack from people for. So the guy clearly stands on his own two intellectual legs, right? Mm-hmm. When he thinks something, he takes it seriously and he stands by it. Good for him. Good for him. Well, there you go. There's the marker. 30 years from 30 years ago today, I guess we have to ask ourselves, where will we be 30 years from now, right? Mm-hmm. We can only hope in a better
submerged.
Place. Submerged. We'll have our feet wet. Oh, man, it's not even funny. Anyway, there you go. Jim Hansen, a salute to Jim Hansen. This sounds like some sort of a... obituary, but not, the guy's still alive, and it's just the 30th anniversary of his major breakout into sort of the consciousness of the world, and we thank him for having done that so many years ago, right?
Indeed, and just to reflect, the sadness of all the lack of inaction that has occurred, because if you think about it, I've mentioned this before. Just 2 months after Hansen spoke to Congress, George H.W. Bush, when he was running, he did a speech in Michigan where he said famously that people who think that nothing can be done about the greenhouse effect have ignored the White House effect. If you think about that 3 decades later and you see what the White House effect now worsening the greenhouse effect, it's like,
yeesh, he's right. But we can see, I mean, I just to close it up, President Smallhands did use his small hands to sign an executive order to stop this most abominous, inconscionable policy. And it's a credit to the people who spoke up and pressed their congressmen and pressed everybody over this issue. So your voice does work. And when we press these people for clean energy action, we're going to get a similar reaction. It'll be grudging, but you just have to push these guys. What's the Latin phrase is illegitimi non carborundum, meaning don't let the bastards grind you down. Right? We can't let that guy do it to us. Anyway, DR, we got to put it down there. You can check out links to some of what we talked about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find this link also on our Facebook page. It's /massclimateaction. You can listen to our show on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, et cetera, Podbean, SoundCloud. And, of course, you can find us on Apple Podcast, which by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
I hope you have a wonderful summer solstice. Mm-hmm. And thanks, everyone, for listening. You guys have a good solstice, too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.